our freedom from fear and apprehension of what tomorrow might bring. Today, like any other human being, I long for the more assurances, certainties in many areas of life, but I have come to see the wisdom of the Creator's plan. The limited look that God's plan entails makes for many goods that are not immediately obvious. Life could be dull if all were clearly known. It is uncertainty that brings zest, excitement, and challenge to life. We discover that when life is too tame, too secure, too sure for us, we will voluntarily do something to add to the elements of doubt and mystery. We will even play games, if need be, to put some excitement into our days. Who would play and who would care to be a spectator if everyone knew before the game began exactly how every move would be made and what the final score would be? The adventure in a game is in its uncertainties, its unpredictabilities. If excellence were guaranteed in every school examination, if success were automatically promised where one undertook a profession, if exquisite happiness were assured in every marriage, or if a yes answer were pledged to every prayer, how drab and unexciting life would be. Where would be the challenge, the joy of victory over the lessons of defeat? The ultimate question that a human might like to have answered would be the nature of life beyond the grave. There is wisdom and faith in the comment of a 10-year-old girl who said that she did not want to know what the future would be like. She loved surprises. Will Rogers was not only an incomparable humorist, but one who revealed great common sense in his daily life. He planned for the future as wisely as he knew how and did not worry about the possible ills or misfortunes that might await him. True contentment and happiness, Rogers believed, came in doing each day's work with cheerfulness and confidence, and in going to bed with no lingering worry. Never let yesterday use up too much of today, he often counseled. He believed it is intelligent to have a reasoned concern for the future, but that inviting trouble and crossing bridges before we come to them is the fruitless exercise. Why stumble over what is behind us? One day, a friend dolefully inquired, "Will, if you had but 48 hours to live, how would you spend them?" The cowboy philosopher laughed and replied, "One at a time, my friend, one at a time." Happily, we do not move into the future alone. No matter what our need, there will usually be someone near to lend a hand, family, friends, doctors, nurses, and others, to come to help us if we are disabled by infirmities. If we encounter other problems, counselors are available to offer guidance. God's love comes to us through other human beings, and we are not orphans in an empty world. God may not will all that comes to us in the days ahead, but he will be present to uphold us and sustain us in whatever experience will be ours of joy or sorrow. The Scottish translation of Psalms 55, verse 10, is a reassuring affirmation of the Creator's care. My God, who is rich in loving kindness, will meet me as at every corner. Thomas A. Kempis once recorded a soliloquy in the quiet of his heart, which began with a fearful survey of the future. Oh, he mused, if I only knew, I would hold out to the last. And his soul rose up and answered him with scorn. Look back, it cried. Has God ever failed you in the past? No. Don't you know that the same God who has been and who is evidently sufficient will be with you every step to the end, always as glorious present for you then as now? We can often find direction for our lives or be lifted in spirit by the faith and wisdom of the poets and seers. They allay our fears for the morrow and give us faith for each day living. This is by an unknown author. If you stand very still at a difficult hour and wait for a silence within, you will be led in wisdom and strength through a world of confusion and din. If year after year you keep inwardly still, God will give you the help that you ask. In the silence he gives, you will find that what you need, his wisdom, his strength for each task. And I know not what the future hath of morrow of surprise, assured alone that life and death is merry underlies. And that's by John Greenleaf Whittier. Wonderful article. And our Bible reading comes from St. Matthew, chapter 6, beginning with verse 25. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. Is not life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are you not much better than they? Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? And why take you thought for a raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of those. Wherefore, if God so clothe the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall not he much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God, and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. I'd like to speak this evening on living life with grace. In these two readings, we hear that the worries and the concerns that come to us all are things that are of little consequence when it comes to the things of the Spirit. When we focus our life on living a spiritual life, then we take a reaccounting of what it is that is most important in our life. Jesus was talking about having enough food or having enough clothes. And for many people of this world, these are everyday kinds of concerns and worries that are things that are needs that perhaps are unfulfilled. And for us, perhaps we have these things fulfilled, but there are many other kinds of worries and anxieties that come to us on a daily level. And so we find that rather than being in a world of plenty and people having less care, less thought about the things of the world and what it takes in order to exist, that oftentimes with more abundance, that there is an increase in anxiety, that with more things and more money that we may have, that it does not decrease our concern about that, but rather it increases our thoughts and our anxiety about losing what it is that we have. It is a strange thing that oftentimes people with few things are the ones who seem most free from the worries and anxieties about material possessions. And so when we enter into the spiritual path, we take on a new consciousness. As Paul talked about, when we were children, we thought as children. And now that we are adults, we think as adults. And so, as the material-minded, worldly person thinks about things of this world, when we enter into the spiritual path, we take on a new perspective. And what is this perspective? It is living a life in grace, a life in spirit. Now, certainly, there are many things that come to us in this world, and we take on many responsibilities. And if we have families to be responsible for, then this increases our sense of responsibility. And if we are leaders within organizations and take on responsibilities in this way, then the load increases. And so on and so on. We can take on as much as we possibly are willing to do. But we must examine our lives. Who is really at the first cause within our life? Within our human consciousness, we believe that we are. We believe that we are the beginning, that our birth into this world was the beginning of our life, that what we make of our life is our responsibility, and that when we leave this body, we simply dissolve back into the earth, and that is the end of everything. But this is the human consciousness. It is the one that is aware of only a certain spectrum. It is like the visible spectrum of light that you see graphs of every so often in science classes that show that there is a very small spectrum of light that we are able to see. And outside of this is a huge spectrum of which we are ordinarily unaware. And so it is with sound and many other types of vibration. There are actually subatomic particles that are blowing like a windstorm right through our earth, right through our bodies, even as we speak. And yet we are unaware of this phenomenon. And so there are so many things that are outside our awareness. To think that only things that are within the awareness of our five senses, that is in the awareness of our consciousness as we are presently having it, to think that that is the sum total of all creation, of all existence, is to live in an illusion and to be deluded by the things, by the sensations, by the information that comes to us through our senses. But when we enter into the spiritual path, we at first accept in principle and in theory and a thought that we are not the first cause, that we are more than this lump of flesh, this lump of clay that has water in it, and perhaps a small amount of electricity in order to run the nervous system. Rather, we come to know that we have many levels of existence, many levels of consciousness, many levels of awareness that are available to us, that ordinarily we do not experience. And so we come to a place where we are told to be still and know that I am God. Now, being still for most of us is a very difficult thing. We're not used to it. We're used to surveying the territory around us, finding out our safety, whether we can relax or not, or whether we need to be attentive to those things around us. We oftentimes go out looking for excitement, as the article talked here today. If things get too dull, then we go out and we create excitement in our life. It's an amazing thing that as I think about this world and why we might have violence and why we might have wars and all the rest of it. And then you see the kinds of movies that are being made where violence and wars and suspense and horror are sold and people pay money in order to go in and to experience these things vicariously through a movie. And you see that we have a great fascination for it and we actually create this within our lives. And so we find that we create excitement in our lives. We create stimulation. We go out and we try to find things that satisfy our senses. And all the time thinking that this will bring us happiness, that if we have a certain amount of experiences, meet the right people and so on, that that will bring us true happiness. But true happiness does not come from these things. As we observe those who perhaps have made a lot of money, or experienced many things in this world, there oftentimes is not accompanying along with that a peace of mind, an upliftment of consciousness, an expansion of spirit. But rather, oftentimes we see that the opposites come and accompany those experiences. And so we have to think about our own lives. What is it that we are in particularly attached? What is those things that we seek out after? What are those things that keep us from going within and being still? For there is a great resistance as we sit down to be silent within ourselves. There is a great resistance. All of a sudden, our bodies begin to ache, or perhaps our thoughts go off to all the things that we should be doing in the day. And we think, boy, I just don't have time for this right now. I need to get going, and I need to get out there and start getting some activity going in my life. Enough of this stillness. And so we find that we avoid it oftentimes. We do not go into the stillness of our own being. But rather we find that distractions come up and they come very powerfully. Or perhaps fears come up. fears of what we might find within ourselves. It's such a great tragedy that we have been convinced that we are taught from everything outside of us that there is something fundamentally wrong at the core of our beings. In Christianity, this is done through saying that we are sinners. In modern-day psychology, the common thread is that we are but animal instincts, and that there is nothing noble, there is nothing uplifting at the core of our beings. But always, from true spiritual God-men, have come the affirmation that who you are within you is God, the purity of God, the bliss of God, the pure existence of God, right within you, the wisdom of God. And that if we go down and go into the core of our being, that is what we will find. But we have been taught so many other things. We have been taught that there is something fundamentally in error in our creation. And yet this goes against perfection and the purity of God. Now it is true that we have built up for ourselves within our consciousness many things, many fears, many attachments, many feelings that we have stuffed down in deep in our consciousness. And so when we go into the stillness of our consciousness, oftentimes those are the first things that we confront. First, through the restlessness of our body, and as we begin to still our body, then the restlessness of our thoughts. And then as the restlessness of our thoughts becomes still, we have these deep, unconscious, buried thoughts and feelings begin to come up into our mind. And so we have to confront them. And these are the dragons within us. As we set out on our spiritual adventure, we will surely come across many of these demons, many of these dragons, many of these thoughts and feelings long gone and buried. In the Bible, it talks about that the graves will release the souls of the dead at a particular time in spiritual experiences. And this is going deep within the unconscious and rooting out all those things that apparently we have come to believe in and be attached to, that we truly believe that we are separate from God. And so each and every one of these must come up out of their graves, out of the unconsciousness, into the surface of our consciousness, out into the world. And there, with God's grace, we can see them for what they are. It is as if when you become scared at nighttime, and the trees are being blown about by the wind, and all of a sudden the adrenaline is flowing. And almost beyond your control, every sound, everything that happens startles you and makes you keenly aware of the dangers around you. And so buried deep within your unconsciousness are many of these fears. But as you bring them out into the light of day, into spiritual consciousness, you will see them for what they are. They are vain illusions, things that have scared you perhaps for eons, and yet they have no true substance, no true reality. Now it is that keenly important that when you go through these experiences, that you keep your mind glued upon God. Everything that comes to you, you must keep your mind glued upon God. There are many experiences that I've had within my own crucifixion where tremendous thoughts, tremendous things have come up to me. There was a time when I was laid out straight with my hands outstretched and my feet pinned to the floor, and I arched with nothing touching the floor except for the tips of my fingers and my toes. It is a feat that I could not ordinarily do, and yet in the spiritual consciousness, I was literally pinned to the cross of my own body. And at that time, I saw a terrible light. It seemed to be the personification of evil to me. And as I looked upon it, I prayed to God to protect me and to keep me safe in it. And I felt his presence. And this experience lasted for some time, and it was terrifying on one level. And yet on another level, I felt the presence of God, and I hung on to that with everything. It felt as if my last fingertips were just clinging upon God. But I hung on to God through the entire experience, and he guided me through it every step of the way. But this is necessary in our experiences in life, that as things that are terrifying to us, as we face those things that perhaps we have created in our own past, that we not let go of God, that we not believe more in evil than we do in God. For as Mother told us, evil is nothing but live spelled backwards. And so when we take our life, when we take our circumstances, and we twist them around and we make our own choices, then oftentimes we pay the consequences for that. The consequences of all those choices come back to us. And sometimes we have made pretty poor choices. Perhaps we have destroyed our bodies, we have destroyed our emotional body, or we have worked at destroying our mental body. And so we have to take the time to face that, to work our way through it, and to rebuild it into something that is a pure reflection of God consciousness within us, until we are pure instruments for God. And so oftentimes these things come to us. A favorite story of mine is of Thomas Edison. And one night there was a terrible fire in his laboratory. And his son, who was an adult, was standing there and seeing the flames go very high up into the sky. He could feel the heat from a great distance away. And tears were streaming down his cheeks as he saw their work going up in flames. And then out of the corner of his eye, he saw his father standing over not too far of a distance. And so he went over to him and expected to see him very distraught, very distraught. Instead, he saw him with a smile on his face, and his light just seemed to be beaming from his face. And he couldn't understand. He says, Father, says, all of your work destroyed in one night in this terrible fire. And Thomas Edison looked at him and he says, yes, isn't it wonderful? All of my mistakes burned up in one night. And so seeing the act and the hand of God and what had happened, seeing the positive value in what had come to him. And so much of it is our perception. So much of it is our evaluation, our judgment. Those experiences that come to us, oftentimes we bemoan our fate. We think, woe is me. And yet, if we could see the larger reality of it, if we could see that God is there, that he is with us at every moment, and that everything that comes to us is for our highest good. Papa Ram Dass used to see everything as God, the world as God, and every person that he saw, he felt was God coming to him in human manifestation. And so he made the comment one time that it was the highest thing that he could do for the evolution of all those whom he came into contact, to see the purity of God within them. I'd like you to examine your thoughts for a moment and think about how you see those people in your life. Perhaps people who give you a hard time, people who have treated you unjustly or unfairly, people who are difficult for you to be able to deal with in this world. Can you see them as God in human form come to play a part in your life? Or rather, do you see the worst in them? Do you give power and energy to the negative attributes that they bring into your life? And so are you helping them or yourself in your evolution towards the purity of spiritual consciousness? Or rather, are you in a downward spiral, taking whatever they give to you and not uplifting it, not making it more noble, but rather taking that and running with it? It is truly a choice that we have. It is truly a choice. And you can either be a blessing to yourself and to those you come into contact with, or you can be a curse. And the choice is yours. The choice is yours. And so in everything that comes to you, feel the hand of God. Feel the grace of God. For you see, as you think, that is how you create in this world. And if you think of God, then you are bringing God into manifestation. you are becoming a pure channel for God consciousness. But if you think of only those things that are small, if you think only of limitations, if you think only of what is wrong in this world, then that is surely what you will bring also. And it is a law of mind and a law of consciousness that you are dealing with. And so when you find yourself in a difficult situation, do not bemoan your fate. Do not think, oh God, you have handed me some sour grapes here. Or blame yourself and think, oh, if I'd been better off, you know, if I had thought better, or if I had done better before, then I would not be in this situation. But rather think of the positive value of it. Think of it as God come to you in that situation, in that form, who has come to help to uplift you. And if you use every circumstance in this way, it is the thing of beauty for the bhakti, those who love God, to see all songs, to see all poetry, to see it all as a manifestation and a working towards God, to take your favorite songs and to sing them as love songs for God, to take your favorite poetry, whether it be of romantic nature or not necessarily spiritual nature, but you can spiritualize it. You can uplift it. To take your work that you do in this life, to take your family whom you are working with on a daily level and make them your experience in God. To take every person that you see and ennoble them within your own mind. It's a wonderful life if you can attain unto that consciousness. Once I had a glimpse of that as I walked upon the campus of a college where I was going to. I saw a mother's image in the heart of everyone that I met. And I felt all the barriers, everything that I had even been unconscious of in the way that I separated myself from those that I came into contact with. And I felt complete freedom. I felt like I was moving within a sea of love. It was a tremendous experience, impossible to describe. But in that experience, I felt my unity with everyone that I came into experience. Into contact with. I did not feel a sense of judgment or a sense of fear or any limitations, but rather only a unifying spirit with everyone whom I saw. And this can be our experience. Gradually over the days, that experience fled away. But more and more in my life, I feel the presence and I feel the spirit of that unifying consciousness. And it binds me not only to God, but to God in every individual who I see. And the love of God sometimes fills me up so much that it just simply spills out and overflows through my heart and through my being. And I can walk as if in a warm sea of this love. And it is an experience that comes spontaneously and naturally. And you see, it involves nothing from the outside. It is an experience that is generated from the inside. And so this kingdom of heaven is a reality. It is something that is available to our consciousness. It is an adventure that we can begin to reach out for and to live in. And it does not all come in a single day. But if we turn our minds to it, if we turn our attention to it, if we decide that is truly what we want. You know, there's a wonderful story of a saint who was walking along, and he saw a man who was hugging onto a thorn bush. And he saw the saint, and he called to the saint, and he says, "Saint, saint, save me, I'm being pricked to death by this thorn bush." And the saint said, "Well, let go." And he said, I cannot, I need you, I need your help. Please release me from this thorn bush." And the saint saw that all the man needed to do was to let go of the thorn bush, and he would be free of it. And so with your cares, with your worries, with your attachments, let go. Practice let go. You embrace your sorrows. You embrace your limitations. You keep them bound to yourself and keep yourself imprisoned in them. And you are the creator of your own prison. And so if you wish to be released and look to yourself, look to the trend of your own thoughts. If you do not have a strong will, then work on strengthening your will. If you do not have love for God or for others, then ask and pray to God for love of himself and all who he is in. And that is everywhere, equally present. Decide today what it is that you want in your life. For every moment you are making a decision, every second you are creating. You are creating right now, in this very moment. And you are creating something in your consciousness. You are creating something in your mind, and it will have sure effects. It will have sure effects. And so what if you are sending out to be one with God, if you are sending out to have that universal experience in which you see all beings, all manifestations, and yourself as living presence of God living his life, then that is surely what you will have. There are many strange experiences that come to you when God takes you in the last mile through all the things that you must go through in order to purify this body, mind, and soul, to attain its oneness with God. And so a trust in God is required all the way through it. And I will relate to you, and I've mentioned it before, but it was such a tremendous experience. And it was one in which I had to let go in order to let God move through me. But Albie and I were down at Mount Washington, and the spiritual consciousness took me over and began to move me. As Mother described, there are times when God makes you sing and dance and do many strange things, and it's all as a matter of changing the atomic structure of your body to bring you into more perfect alignment with God. And everyone's experiences are unique, and yet there are certain pattern of experiences in order to release you into the highest consciousness of your being. But in this, I began to walk backwards with my eyes closed. And there was a moment of self-awareness where I thought, well, this is a very strange thing that I'm doing here. And what if somebody comes out and sees me? And I'd be very embarrassed and hard-pressed to explain what my actions were. But I was up by the wishing well and began to walk backwards with my eyes closed. And strangely enough, I didn't run into anything. I went in a perfect pattern. And then I started going down the sidewalk and went down around the tennis courts, over the tennis courts then, and all the way around the tennis courts and back around and up to the wishing well, and three more times around the wishing well, all with my eyes closed, most of the time backwards. And I didn't run into anything, and I didn't stumble. And I don't know the reason for this kind of an experience, other than how Mother has explained it. But there was the moment where I believe I could have stopped the experience due to my own embarrassment or my own feeling of awkwardness about that. And yet I decided to let God move through me. It was very powerful. It was like a huge magnet that came and took over my being and began to make me move in this way. But with each one of these experiences, I came closer into surrendering to God. And it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. You think, well, of course, I can surrender to God. But think of perhaps the most embarrassing situation you could imagine. Or think of a way that you might have to let go of your control, of what you think of how you are. And then if God took that over and made you act in a different way, could you do it? Could you do it? Could you let go and surrender yourself to the will of God within you? Now, God will never lead you into anything that will be harmful to you. He will lead you into those experiences that are required in order for you to uplift your consciousness and to attain your oneness with Him. But can you let go? Can you trust in God? Can you let go enough of your thorn bush of worldly troubles and take a moment and be still in the stillness of your own being and to realize the love, beauty, bliss, the wonder of your oneness with God. Enter into your own kingdom of heaven, and realize for yourself all of that which you might attain. And know that you and God are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. And realize the truth of those words. So live in grace, starting today. Live in the grace of the consciousness of your oneness, of your experience of being one with God. Living in grace is living in the kingdom of heaven, of your own consciousness. I'll be with you in this intention.